Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to episode number 81 on the car wash. On today's show, Gavin Hunt's gone where? We talk Euros, Yeye retires, and Safa CEO says Bafana will be given time to rebuild. Whether you're tuning into on SL Podcast at CO.za, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Mikey King 96.7's Game Time, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Roberts, and of course, I'm with the big dog himself, Mr. Teko Madise. How's it going, buddy?
I'm good. And you, Shawnee?
I'm good, my boy. Good to have you back on the show. I know you've been super busy with Supersport. How was all the Euros and stuff?
They started very, very slow for other countries. But yeah, we know how it ended up.
Crazy.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
very,
man.
Very interesting.
Well, we'll get into that later in the show. But of course, we start off with a world-class joke of the day. As usual, you're going to love this one. I just discovered that Bruce Lee had a vegetarian brother. Broccoli.
Okay. I can just hear everyone laughing.
It's not a bad one, eh?
No, it's not a bad one.
Thank you.
Aiden wouldn't like it.
Aiden loves it. I think Aiden's a vegetarian. All right, from there we move on to pole position. Pole position is the segment where we ask our fans and our supporters club a certain question and get voice note replies. This week we asked you, how should Chiefs approach the CAF final? And this is what you guys had to say.
Our boys, once they enter NFL, they must come with confidence, put pressure on Al-Ahly, and we must manage to score first.
The Chiefs must not allow Al-Ahly to score in the first 15 minutes.
I think, Mina, the approach by the Chiefs, it will be a difficult game for them because those guys are fast in the pace and Namayral ball, they are dangerous.
They should, in fact, attack as the game starts. They must be more offensive because these countries from the north, when they settle with one goal, they are able to defend and maintain the game throughout.
All I can say is just Chiefs need to score at least two goals.
The possibility of victory lies in the attack, so they should first whistle, they should attack. That's it. And the best defense also is to attack. So
yes, I think this thing is very simple. Né? It's one game, last game. There is no second round or second leg. All they need to do, ne, Chiefs must just go there and add another bus. They've been parking a bus when they were playing those two legs, weighted first leg, weighted second leg. So now they must just add another bus. Then they will have a second bus.
And this time they've got nothing to lose. I think it is now or never. They just should just go there and score goals and also defend wisely. And then they just go and kill the game.
Right, there you have it. I mean, that we can move straight into the chat of the CAF Champions League final. Obviously, as we predicted, the fans are saying that Chiefs need to not concede. Chiefs need to score first. All the obvious stuff. Go on the offensive. Doing a bit of research this morning, Pizzo, a few minutes before the show, went online saying that he's not worried about Al-Ahly scoring. They always score. They've scored some very good goals leading up to the final, and I do agree with him on that. He's not worried of them scoring at all. His only concern is a certain player called Nurkovic, and he always seems to pop up when unexpected. And that's his main concern. I don't think he's too concerned about losing this game, to be honest. A lot of fans will obviously agree with him, and I'm sure a lot of Chiefs fans will disagree with him. Teko, what's your take on this final, and concerns, I would say, for Chiefs? Let's stick to Chiefs, though, because obviously we pro Chiefs. What are your concerns for Chiefs going into this final?
Sean, I've listened to the voice notes and what people are saying on the pole position. Speaking of Kaizer Chiefs having nothing to lose, which is bull to me.
They got everything to lose, bro.
Dude, you're in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
You got everything to lose.
Yeah.
with all the sacrifices and the traveling, with so many months into it, and then people are going to come in the last day of the final, they're saying they've got nothing to lose. There's a lot of stuff to be lost. So much money to play for, and I think most people tend to forget that, especially with what COVID did, especially for to the clubs. You know, clubs lost so much money. And I think KZ Chiefs tend to gain if they win. But I think my biggest concern for KZ Chiefs is both scoring and defensively. Look, you look at the turning point for KZ Chiefs. It was probably maybe against Simba, where Simba actually didn't take KZ Chiefs very seriously, and then created that.
Yeah.
I think that was a turning point for KZ Chiefs. I think it's one of those high-scoring games for KZ Chiefs. But also, you look at the returning leg; they considered 3.
Yeah.
3-0. And from there on, it's
that's a concern, right?
Yeah, and from there it's 1-0, draw there, 1-0 there. But it shows you that even before that high scoring game, they were not convincing enough. I don't think, and also you must understand that we understand that they were in the Champions League, but they never came out and said that we want to win the Champions League. They were just participating like everybody else, but getting results, getting in there. So for me, I think KZ Chiefs have been punching above their weight.
Yeah.
Now that they realize they're in the final, it's one of those situations, guys. We're in the final. What is it that we need to do? We might as well try and win it. But you look at the whole team as to, if you have to pinpoint where exactly KZ Chiefs can win the game, it's probably maybe in one instance where it's one of those situations where Niko Vision needs to be in the box.
Right. As always.
As always, right? But you look at Al Ahly, how they're able to go and win away 2-0, come back home and win 1-0 or play 1-1 draw. You look at how they win against Sundowns 2-0 at home, come here and play a draw. So you look at all the stuff, and now you have a situation where the final is one leg now. So you don't have a second opportunity to actually try and rectify things.
Yeah.
So for Chiefs, look, man, I hope football goals are aligned.
Sure.
So they can be able to pull this through. But it's just that it's one of those situations where it's a David versus Goliath story. Everything is aligned for KZ Chiefs. And there's one thing that also we need to be careful. That's not biting into what Peter's saying. Peter plays.
He's playing a game,
games.
Right? Yeah, he's
Peter
playing.
Peter plays mind games every
he's
time.
He's one of the best at it, right?
Yeah. And I promise you, if Nukovic reads too much into this, Nukovic will get a red card. I'll tell you why. Because Peter knows how to trigger Nukovic.
Yeah.
And the only dangerous player at KZ Chiefs right now is Nukovic. So if you cut out Nukovic, you're cutting the life out of KZ Chiefs. So I think they Peter's very strategic. And you're playing against teams that they know how to dive. They know how to waste time. And you look at KZ Chiefs at the squad, the bench, and the reserve. There's few experienced players on that pitch.
Yeah.
Very, very few experienced players. And
which hopefully will change next season.
Yeah, of course. And when you speak experience, you're not only speaking experience as to a Champions League, but you're speaking experience of playing in Africa with your national team when the odds are against you.
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very few players that will be on the starting lineup that have that experience. So already KZ Chiefs, they're having so much disadvantage, but as well, I think that they need to use that that disadvantage to the advantage, because now they are a known entity. They can surprise anybody, and they've got they're not expected to play beyond how they've been playing the whole season, but they're expected to show up. And by showing up, which means you need to be very, very patient and very strategic. You know, patient within the game. Wait for Al Ahly to make the mistake. Al Ahly are the ones who need to come out and actually attack you, because they're regarded as one of the team of the century. So they need to come out and play. So KZ Chiefs needs to be very, very strategic. They don't need to go all out and go out and with blaze guns, because otherwise, if that's the case, if that's not how they want to approach the game, trust me, whoever that's on goalposts, whether it's Vuma, whether it's Itu, and it's Akpe, they're going to collect the ball 4 times.
That was my next question to you, actually. Who do you think is going to be starting in goals? Or who do you think should start in goals?
The person that I think that should start in goals and also on the pitch are the players that the coach needs to build a team around next year. And in that regard, I think Vuma had a couple of games that are great. And if you speak about players getting experience, at some point Itu was as young as Vuma. He was thrown he was thrown in the deep end and survived. He became one of the best. And I think we need to be realistic and be fair and be honest to ourselves. If this is not an opportunity to give Vuma, when are you going to give him such an opportunity as a player that actually deserves? And I think he has a couple of, I think he has a man of the match in the same fact.
No, he's done very, very
well. So I don't understand. We can't be in this position where now it's the big game and then you want to reshuffle, you want to go back to your default setting. What else? Those default settings are not the one that got you in the final in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I just want to go back to what you said about Nurkovic. And I want to ask you if you believe what you said in terms of if they cut Nurkovic out the game, they cut Chiefs' legs off. Do you think that? Do you think they don't have another arsenal in their weapon? Do you think they have a plan B?
Look, the plan B that they have, it's not a plan B that can actually hurt Al Ahly's defense.
Yeah.
You have Castro. Castro will never run beyond any defender to go and get the ball behind.
Yeah.
Castro is not an aggressive striker that will cause havoc inside the box, aerially or on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Castro's quality is the link-up play. He's very good at linking up play with other players as well.
Yeah.
So now, looking at the striking ability, you've got that. If Kama actually do play, Kama hasn't played for such a long time. So the chances are, I mean, guys, it happens. We I'm for KZ Chiefs. I wish KZ Chiefs can win it so that we can have a different conversation. But their star players haven't been performing very, very well. Unfortunately, Kama's been out with injury. Castro's been also struggling a little bit with injuries. Lebo Manyama on and off in terms of his performance, and most of the time he's been off. And this is a game that is going to require everybody to play as a unit, and they haven't been doing so even domestically. So now they're going to be required to do something that I've never done the whole season. So it's a true test for KZ Chiefs. And you must understand, Sean, that playing the Champions League final, it comes with so much big nerves. This is not an MTN 8 final or Telkom or last game of the league. And here's the thing, Sean. I just, irrespective of what the results are, I just hope that KZ Chiefs are not going to choke like they did last season.
I echo your sentiments in terms of hope that the footballing gods are with Chiefs. And on another positive note, it's televised, isn't it? Which is going to be great.
It should be, man. Look, Sean, KZ Chiefs, I think KZ Chiefs, with what KZ Chiefs is and what KZ Chiefs has done in this country, I think KZ Chiefs deserve to have a star. And look, man, things happen in football. They can come in on Saturday and have the best football that we've ever seen. You know, get motivated, but also it requires everybody to be on the same path. Al Ahly is beatable. But they're gonna. It's not an easy side to beat. It's a side that knows how to win, and Pito knows that if he lose that game, he gets fired. So it's one of those opportunities for everybody that's at KZ Chiefs to actually do something that no generation at KZ Chiefs has ever done.
Let me just touch on what you said there. That if Pito loses, he gets fired. Do you think that's true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sean, Peter Day hasn't been accepted because of his African roots, you know, and knowing how Peter operates and looking at what's the norm in Al Ahly. They're so used to foreign coaches, South American coaches, overseas-based European coaches, not an African coach.
Yeah.
And with that as well, you know, he gets so much criticism, especially from the legends of the club.
Yeah.
And in the media also, that's not as general as the media this side.
Yeah.
You know, and there's high expectations as well. You can't come in and win Champions League. This is something that we've been winning. Yes. We want something more, and they want to be in the Club Africa World Cup where last season they played against Bayern.
Bayern, yes. Yeah,
yeah, they want to win those things, and Peter knows that anybody can come in and take his position and do exactly what he's been doing, or even more. So winning Champions League for Al Ahly, it's not the biggest thing ever, but it's something that helps them to get to where they need to get. And also, you're looking at the challenges that KZ Chiefs were facing this season. The expectations are so high for Peter to beat KZ Chiefs, unlike last season. So now with how are the opponents? I don't think Al Ahly will have that can afford to lose this game or even go to an extra time with how they painted Kansas Chiefs. So for Kansas Chiefs, there's no much pressure, unless maybe the pressure they put on it's for themselves to try and win it.
Yeah.
But as for the whole world, nobody's expecting Kansas Chiefs to actually beat Al Ahly, but I think that can be the secret of the game.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one being a player at Chiefs if you have just signed that 1 month extension, and that brings a whole nother pressure to yourself that you're fighting for your future. And nonetheless, it's a Champions League final, which is crazy. I think in an ideal world for me, as a neutral, as Vuma starts, has the game of his life. Billiard comes on and scores two, because he's so hot and cold, but I do like him as a person. I've played with him, and I think it's going to be a cracker, and I'm going to go with a Chiefs 2-1. I have to, but we'll get to that a bit later. But yeah, well dissected there, Turco. It's going to be a cracker of a game. I hope so. We'll all be glued to our TVs. Saturday night, right?
Saturday night, yeah. I think I might be working in that game.
Okay, nice one. But let's move on swiftly. Gavin Hunt to Chipper United. Now, I don't know whether to cry, to laugh, to vomit, or whatnot, but an interesting appointment. I think, as much as I'm anti-Chipper, I think this could be the signing that they've needed. We've spoken about this at length, that they need to now start taking their position in the PSL seriously. And I think this is it. I think if Gavin chooses his squad, if Gavin is able to choose his assistant, which looks like he hasn't been able to choose his assistant, because we all thought Dane Clate was going to be the right choice. There's now talk of Ian Taylor, the ex-Ajax/Cape Town Spurs assistant, or head coach, I should say. But it's an interesting choice from Gavin as well, because he's gone on record saying it's an exciting project, and I understand what he's saying by that. I think if he can do well with Chipper, if he can do a top six finish next season, he sort of cements himself back in as a very, very good coach, even though his past exploits with Chiefs. Teko, what do you think of this?
You know, I asked Gavin when we were doing Euros, like I tried to squeeze in the question as to, where are you going next season? Are you going back home, meaning Super Sport?
Yeah.
Or I was also looking at Sterling's. I think the reason why I was looking at both teams is the style of play and the type of players that they have in their disposal that can actually be able to adjust to what Gavin Hunt likes as to how he plays. And
yeah,
those are the teams that can actually quickly adjust to what he wants. And
yeah,
they have the right personnel on the team. And Gavin, who he dribble parts me with that. He didn't answer me, but he had his other ways of explaining. So for me to see him signing for Chip, it was a shocker to me.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as to, I really don't care about Chip and Benes, and I don't care how he's done things. I think
we're over that now.
Yeah, we're over that now. For me is. You look at the players that they have are cheaper, and they are a very, very, very passing orientated team. They have the players that can only play that style of play.
Yeah.
Right? And for you to get players, new players on board, which means you need to spend. And knowing Chipper Mbengezi, because he likes to, fire players and bring them back.
Yeah.
nobody actually knew, or nobody with proper talent comes in to the team. There's always these players that comes in, go to NFD, come back again. So I don't know whether he'll be able to help Gavin Hunt in that regard in terms of signing players. And for Gavin Hunt, I think for me, this is just me personally. I think you're from a very, very toxic relationship, my friend. You've got scars to prove it. Yeah. You can't jump into another relationship. Relax down a bit, go smoke cigar, relax,
Interesting, hey.
Look at where the game is going, because the thing is, I understand what happened. I think what happened to Kansas City really, really did hurt them, especially because of the look at where they are in the Champions League. I think it did, because he was the person that actually tried to build on the project, because he always deals with the projects. But if you look at the spaces where he's been dealing with the projects, are people that are, he's been in situations where the management always backed him up. So now with Chipa, I wouldn't say Chipa Mpenga is a businessman, but I don't think he's a football person. You've got Stanley Matthews that is a businessman, that is a super sport, but he is a football person.
Yeah, John Comitis. Yeah.
John Comitis. You've got Keza Mtaul. You've got Ivan. We can name them all. You've got Chipa Mpenga, who is the business person, not so much of a football person. Now, how will we understand the project that you want to build for Chipa United? And also the challenges also of bringing in new exciting talent to Chipa, whereas we know how Chipa has been the last few years. So it's been very, very interesting. But for me, I just feel like Gavinan rushed into this decision. And I think he could have, you know, after Euros, he could have just relaxed a little bit, take off his time and try and see maybe the certain things as well. You know, the thing is that maybe also if you don't give yourself time, you never know what is it that you need to improve as a person or as a coach or as a player.
Sure.
I think the certain things as well about his game that he needs to tweak a little bit, because they didn't work last season. And you need time for you to do that. And by jumping onto the next team, you don't give yourself time to actually reflect and do the self introspection. And I think that's always been the case with Gavin Hahn, because I don't think he's ever been out of the job. So I think maybe that's the norm of he doesn't know how to function without a job. But I think he could have just, even 2 months into it, you know, just relax and look at the situation how it is. And by going to Chipa, I don't think that's the right move. But for Chipa, it is the right move, because now you bring in one of the biggest coaches in the country. Hopefully, with that appointment, you'll be able to attract good players to come to play for you.
So that's the thing, right? When Gavin says this is an exciting project to work on, I really hope he is talking more as well on the development side. He went on record saying that they have world-class facilities at Chipa, which isn't always the case at a lot of clubs. And we've seen the stadium that they have. It's magnificent. I'm not too sure. I've seen some of the training facilities outside of the stadium, and it is world-class. But I really hope that the project he is referring to is obviously not just the first team, but is accessing that talent in that capture area, and PE has got such an amazing captured area, and I really hope, because we don't see that, right? I don't even think they have a development structure there. I could be wrong.
No, but I think they do. Although I think the only thing that they have right now is a Diski team.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think they actually do have a proper development structure. But also in terms of probably maybe the project as a whole. You look at probably how Gavin has introduced players into his teams, where Gavin has never been scared to go and get an amateur player to come in and play in the professional setup. He has done so, that's everywhere he went to. But the biggest challenges right now that any team are facing is to spend less but still have quality. And I think with that regard, going to Chipa, I think that might work for Chipa, because Gavin still has other players on his radar. He can have, but there's rumor that who's that boy that was Ramazulu now, the Sundowns boy, he went to Egypt and came back. What is his name just now? Because there's so many names on my head. Sorry, we'll come back to that.
Tall striker?
No, the young boy. He played for Verts, and then he went to play in Egypt, and he came to Phakathi Mahlambi. Mahlambi, yeah. So there's other players.
Phakathi.
Yeah, so there's players that are on Gavin's hands radar that he can actually bring in and help reestablish their careers, and also help reinforce and make Chipa United one of the better teams within the league. But the challenge also that Gavin will be facing is he doesn't have enough time. And he came out and said that he's been in positions like this for before with Swallows and all the type of stuff.
It's part and parcel being a coach, right?
Yeah, but all these other teams were trigger friendly, but they didn't have enough ammunition at Chipa. Chipa is trigger friendly. My friend, he's got everything just next to him. And also as a coach, you want to be going to work every day to train your team, knowing that you've got the management backing. You know, and I think maybe Gavin also wants to go back to what made him. start projects from scratch, where with teams that are not expected to do so, and if that's the idea, then cheaper should be a good project.
Yeah, I agree. As you said, hopefully he can get the players that he wants in there. And speaking of transfer business, let's move on to what's been happening in the transfer window. Darren Keats, Cape Town City, who in turn have also signed the Maritzburg number 2, Bongani Mpandle, who played under Eric Tinkler when he was at Maritzburg. Interesting one. Grant Kakane to Sundowns. That's an interesting one. In terms of lovely guy, good player, very injury prone. Can't see him starting every game, can you?
The question is, which position will he be playing? His versatility will come in and help the team.
Being a versatile player has its pros and has its cons, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also the thing is, knowing how Sundowns always push the envelope, they probably maybe want to play a different type of system next season. Maybe I see Mamelodi Sundowns next season playing 3 at the back, full time, the whole season playing 3 at the back, so that they can have more players in the midfield. Because if you look at Sundowns, there were so many players that needs to play, I think in my mind the only system that can allow those to have as many players of that type of a talent on the pitch is to just a little bit trip the system a little bit. And I think with Kotia maybe playing in that deep line playmaker, so you always have that 4 when defending. And with Grant Kakana, it depends on where he's gonna play, because we've seen how Dewood played. I think he's stamped his authority there. And we know Libusa is the captain now. It's gonna be very interesting to see.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't say Grant Kakana is even brought in for Champions League. But also the thing is, you look at also his age, Nascimento as well is no longer on the right side of age. So it's up to Grant. Like, we've spoken about players that go into Sundowns, we've spoken about it in depth, and I think it's up to Grant as to wherever he's been given a chance to play.
Yeah, look, we spoke about this. Yeah, you're right. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago in terms of there's a time when you sign for Sundowns, and I think for Grant, this is a perfect time for him in terms of his career. Obviously, financially a good move. Game time, I'm not too sure. Let's see, but we'll watch that one closely. Langerman to Swallows, potentially on loan, which would be good for him to get some game time. Rakale to Sekekune. Didn't see that one. I thought he had a good season last season, didn't he?
Look, I think as a footballer, you always want to be in a position where you know you're going up and up. I strongly feel that with Rakhale's talent, he's
going sideways.
He's going sideways so many times. And
who is representing this boy? This is what frustrates me.
Yeah, whoever is representing Rakhale, it's very frustrating, because I don't think Jomo actually maybe has that confidence that he used to have within his abilities. That's why moving sideways is always like a right thing to do. Like, you're moving from Sekekune to what? It's the same type of thing. And if you want to actually be in a position where you once were when you were playing for Orlando Pirates, you don't have to come back and play for Orlando Pirates again, but aim higher.
Yeah.
You know, aim for teams that are playing in a top 4, top 6 position that wants to win something. Because at the end of the day, if you want to be regarded in South Africa as a true legend of the game, you know, you want to be counted as people that actually contributed positively and changed the complexion of the game, and you've got something to back you up.
Yeah.
And I think with Rakhale's talent, I think he's capable of that, but his sideways movements, he's just going to disappear within the game and we'll never know. I just hope that doesn't happen, but I've seen so many talent that happens by moving sideways too much. And I think he had a good season, not a great season. He had a good season, but he had an opportunity to step it up, because once you are free, people don't understand the license of being free these days. You know, being free these days is a thing.
Yeah, but I think a lot of players panic when they're free.
Yeah, because
they panic. No income. Oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah, and I understand it. And I think it's about time our agents advised.
Yeah.
Being free now, it's a proper ticket.
Yeah.
Because now no team will actually spend. I'm telling you, no driver's seat belt on. Just relax. Because now no team has to buy you. Now the only thing you should do is negotiating your contract and what is to come to you.
Yeah.
you know, being free is very smart. So people are just rushing into contracts, and you're rushing into signing with Kukudu for 3 years. They haven't even played one game.
That's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. But we'll move on from that. Austin Dube, centre back from Richards Bay to Kaizer Chiefs. Watch that boy. He's something special, in my opinion. George Lebese being assessed by Swallows. Let's hope Georgie can get his. We know the talent he has. I think Swallows could be a good move for him. Let's hope he puts pen to paper soon. And our man Temba Zwane to stay at Sundowns for 2 more years. Teko, I think we're pleased with that result.
That one, I had no doubts about it. Because I've been speaking to Mshishi about it. And it was just unfortunate that whenever the negotiations were supposed to start, there was always something that Sundowns was getting wrong. So for me, it was not an issue because I don't see Temba Zwane playing for any team.
No. Where's he going to go, right?
Yeah, that's not even sideways, dude.
Yeah.
No, like for one of the most influential player playing regular football.
Yeah.
Every game, and then you go to a team within the league itself. What are you trying to achieve?
Yeah.
You know, like for me, that was not even sideways. And I had this conversation with him last week. I think it was him and Onyango. I said to them, most players don't understand the importance of finding the right team and staying there.
Mm.
You only get to understand those things when you're gone. I said, we always think that the grass is always greener on the other side.
Mm.
I said to them, now you're in this position where you don't worry about training key, training facilities,
sure,
winning games and bonuses. Now you're gonna move from this comfort of your own. Mm. Where you're going to a team that you don't even know where you're training tomorrow.
Yeah.
The training kit it's not even iron. You know those small annoying things?
Yeah.
Like
that make a big difference.
It makes a lot of difference. And I had that conversation with them. I said, guys, the grass is not as green on the other side. When you have an opportunity to stay at Sundowns longer, stay.
Yeah, 100%.
Stay.
100%. The grass is greener where you water it, Teko.
Yes,
that's what I say. Let's move on swiftly. I managed to get hold of a recording of SAFA CEO Tebogo Motlanthe talking about how they are going to allow Bafana to rebuild. Here's what he had to say.
Look, I think it has been a great success for us as a country because we all know most of the players who are here are getting their first time, their first feel of the national team. But it speaks to our general approach now that we had said we are rebuilding. And this COSAFA is going to open doors to most of the players who have been knocking on the national team's door. Coach Hugo is there and he has assured me that he is watching these games with keen interest. So we will see opportunities opening in the senior men national team for players who are here. And as the association, we are grateful to the clubs which have released the players here because they've afforded them the opportunity to be looked at closer.
Teko, just touching on this quickly, not a long one, but I'm pleased to hear how he's talking about how this COSAFA is an opportunity for the youngsters to prove himself, which we know. I'm pleased to hear how happy he is how they are going to be given Bafana time, especially the guys that are off to Japan for the Olympics, time to rebuild, which I've never heard of coming out of anyone from SAFA's mouth. Do you believe it?
No.
Yeah.
I won't lie to you.
No, of course not.
Yeah, of course not. Look, with you speaking of COSAFA giving youngsters an opportunity to be looked at by Coach Hugo Boss, right? you look at the age group there. You've got Mkhwelisi, who's 25.
Mm.
You've got, I think, Mpumabuyi there, who's 26, 27. Right? Mm. You've got Rowan Williams, who's like 28, 29. Mm-hmm. 30 somewhere there.
Mm.
And the list goes on.
Yeah.
And the guys that we supposed to be looking at to start that rebuilding phase with are the guys that are going to Tokyo.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Because now if you're saying 26, 25 year olds are your youngsters that you're looking at because of COSAFA, then you're still doing what other coaches have done.
Yeah.
You're not rebuilding anything. Because in 2 years down the line, that 27-year-old, you'll be maybe having whatever caps in the Bafana team. We back into the age group of Temba Zwane's that are there right now, your level Manyamas. So yeah. you want players to be able to play the high level for a longer time in the Bafana Bafana. I think you need to look at the under-23s and you need to look at that. Don't use Kasava as a base. Kasava, if there were other players that are way younger that we could see and watch, that would be great. But we're saying 25 years are still youngsters, that's a problem.
Yeah, it's always been like that, right?
Yeah, I've been called a youngster when I was 25.
Yeah, it's madness. I'm still called a youngster because I'm so bloody good looking. But anyway. Right, from there, let's move on to the international news desk. We are joined by Soccer Laduma's international news correspondent, Kurt Buckerfield. Kurti boy, how art thou?
Shawnee, I'm good, thanks. How are you, man?
Tickle. I'm fantastic.
How's it going?
Hey, car, butter the field.
You sound very serious today, Kurti.
No. It's just been a busy morning, you know. A lot of kit releases.
Okay.
Working alone on the international section is difficult in times like these, but I feel alive.
Okay.
I feel alive.
Everything okay at home? Girlfriend?
Oh, everything's great. Everything's great. Okay. Everything's great.
Just checking, bro. Talk us through the Copa America. What happened?
Brazil. Argentina won 1-0 in the final against Brazil. At the Maracanã in Brazil, yeah. Captained by Leo Messi.
Leo Messi.
Yeah, I think.
First cup, eh? First serious cup.
First major international trophy for Messi. And that, you know, is the standard when you are considered a great player. You will naturally be judged on what you can do at the highest level or international level. And he's done it. It always seemed to be a mark on his name, although I've never really subscribed to the idea that he couldn't perform for Argentina because I've watched him for Argentina. But he kept getting so close. I think he lost four finals, including three in 3 years or 2 years, two Copa Americas and then the 2014 World Cup. You know, and I think that the pressure had seriously built where it was like Messi's whole legacy could be defined on whether he could do it for Argentina. And do it for Argentina is, for Messi, for someone of that level, is win a trophy. And now he's done it in the best fashion. He made major tournament history by becoming the first player to finish a tournament as the top goal scorer, the top assist provider, the player of the tournament, and champion. It's the first player who's ever done that.
Wow.
So it's incredible. I mean, football, you guys will know, it's a game of fine margins, and Messi's almost gotten there on so many occasions, but now to get over the line against Brazil, in Brazil, at the Maracanã, where Brazil I think have lost twice in the last like 20 years or something like that. Incredible.
Yeah.
I stayed up for that game. I watched a few of the knockout games and group games, and just incredible. Very pleased for him, because I know that it will be a huge monkey off his back. Yeah.
And were the stadiums full or was it empty due to COVID?
The final was the only game that had fans, and it wasn't at full capacity, but no, there were I think a couple of thousand fans there. Yeah.
And due to this result, do you feel this has any impact of his Barcelona career?
Well, the news regarding his Barcelona career is that he's going to sign a new 5-year deal. Apparently that was agreed yesterday. That's where, that's when news broke in Spain. So initially it was said he was going to sign a 2-year contract and then after that go to the MLS. I'm not sure where that really came from, because it now looks like he's agreed a 5-year deal, 50% wage cut, which I'm sure isn't going to affect him too much. And it looks like, yeah, he's committing to the project. He's committing his long-term future to the club. That's that. It's not announced yet. It's not official yet. I'm sure that there's a few more things that need to be ironed out, but it looks like he's definitely staying.
Yeah, absolutely. It went Rome, not home. My God. I mean, what a game. I do believe the better team won at the end of the day. A lot has been said about Gareth Southgate's decisions in terms of bringing on the two youngsters that haven't kicked a ball hardly and then putting them on to take penalties. Very, very proud of the guys. I think if you went into the competition saying that England would be in the final and lose it, you'd take that any day. Yeah, anything could have happened on the night, right? And as disappointed as I am, I'm still proud of the guys, but yeah, I think in terms of a fresh new England squad, you've got to be excited as an England fan.
I agree with you, Sean. I just worry that, my only worry is that the team isn't really going to progress, because there's great players in that side and a lot of very good young players. But I feel like Southgate, along with the players, has to evolve, because they can't go into the next tournament, which is the World Cup next year in Qatar, with this exact same style of play. I just don't think it's brave enough, especially with the talent that he has available to him. So I worry that England are going to keep getting close. You know, they got close at the 2018 World Cup. They got to the semi-final. They've gotten extremely close at the Euros, getting to the final and losing. And I'm just worried that it's now only going to go backwards. Do you see England getting to the final of the World Cup? I'm not sure. Do you see them winning the World Cup? I'm really not sure. I know that England have aspirations, or the FA has aspirations of this England national team being successful and winning trophies, or at least competing for the biggest prizes and getting close. And I just don't see that happening with Southgate. I don't dislike Southgate, or I don't think that he's a bad manager, but it has to evolve. I feel like when you have so many attacking options on that bench and you don't bring them on within the 90 minutes, it's weird. It's strange to me. And I think England fans will probably also want to see the team play with a little bit more bravery. I don't know. I'm interested to hear your takes on that. Then I'm also I found it very strange that Saka was made to take that fifth penalty. I know that's something that's been spoken about ad nauseum over the last few days, but I'm quite curious as to how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, just in terms, I'll give it a take right now, but just in terms of the penalty, I mean, you've got Jack Grealish, you know, you've got Luke Shaw, who had an outstanding game. The list can go on and on.
Raheem Sterling, Sean.
Yeah, Raheem Sterling. I mean, the list can go on and on of the players that just... It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's what they do week in and week out. It just made absolutely no sense. And I think that's why the English faithful have gone absolutely berserk. And you saw the mayhem after the game as well. And as I said, as disappointed I am, I'm super proud of the
guys. Course,
But you just think, are they ever going to come that close in the not-too-distant future? I don't know.
Teko,
what's your take, big doggy?
Hey, guys. Look, I think Gareth Southgate is either is protecting other players, or he was just trying to take a piss out of this. The thing is, in big tournaments like this, I would understand if there are nerves and guys are scared to take penalties.
Yeah.
But also, as a nation that was so under pressure to win it, especially at home, you could have prepared for every different scenarios.
Mm.
And I strongly believe that at the time, you know who can do what, and as a coach, you need to be able to protect, especially the younger ones, because they are your future, because you want to build a team around them going forward.
Mm.
With what he did with for me, I'll never understand I've never understood people coming in to take penalties.
Well, yeah, that's I couldn't believe.
Yeah, so you don't trust the players to be on the field, but you trust them to help you win the game via penalties. You never trusted Sancho from the game one, you know, and to give such a huge responsibility to Saka. I think you were just trying to show, I don't know who he was trying to show to, that I can make a superstar of this boy, whatever the case might be. But there were other senior players on the pitch that could have taken the penalties. But for the fact that you substituted two of the senior players just before the penalty take, and then you introducing these two new, you're not helping any other. You're not even helping yourself to win the tournament. So, I strongly feel that, and especially Sean, you look at the time frame, and you look at also what happened immediately after they lost. I don't think they do have enough time to moan onto what's happening right now. I don't think come the World Cup they'll be able to play at the full potential. And yet again, they didn't play well. They were not attractive. They were not the way they were playing. It wasn't nice in the eye. You had so many players that were exciting, but they were on the bench. You want to put them in, but you can't because of the system that he wants to play. You're playing with 5-6 You remember I told you about this Chelsea winning team, that they won Champions League with 6 defenders, 7 defenders. Mm. Now Gareth Southgate going to tournament now, he wants to do that with Trippier playing as a right wing back, and Luke Shaw's right wing back with 3 at the back, with 2 defensive midfielders, with Phillips and Rice. So now that restricts you from playing more attacking players. Once you do have that, you can see the deficiency in his tactical approach into the game. And I don't think he will change. I don't think he has enough time to actually change and upgrade himself going into the World Cup. We know teams that were supposed to be, there were teams that were equally good. I felt that they could have been in the final, but they didn't. So, you know, one or two, especially for Spain. You look at how Spain played. If Spain had Harry Kane in there, they would have won the tournament. They had Morata there. they were passing the ball. They were more creative, but the chances, they couldn't even score. Yeah. And I knew that Italy coming into the final, playing against against England after playing such a big game against Spain, they're not going to find any difficulties like they did against Spain. I think that England have players in the arsenal, but they don't have the right typical approach.
Yeah, I just feel like football will always reward bravery, that England system or Gareth Southgate's system just isn't brave, and we've spoken about it at length now, but you know, the Rashford and Sancho coming on as substitutes later on, even if it's just for a kick, every professional footballer can kick a football, but if you don't have confidence and momentum behind you, it's very, very difficult to switch on and to suddenly step up in a crucial moment like that, after not being trusted throughout the tournament, after not being played throughout the tournament. Rashford didn't start a single game for England. If somebody had to say that a few months ago, you know, they'd have been called crazy. Sancho started one game and I think maybe appeared 2 more times. And then they brought on specifically to take these very important spot kicks. That just doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't make sense to me, especially taking Henderson off and Kyle Walker, 2 senior players, like Teko pointed out. But Mourinho also said the same thing as you, Teko. You know, Southgate could very well just be protecting his players now by saying that I chose the order. Because there might have been players who shied away from that responsibility. If, you know, I don't want to...
Which is unacceptable.
Which is unacceptable, especially... And I'm sorry, I've read that Raheem Sterling was 9th in the order, 8th in the order. That is unacceptable. It's Raheem Sterling who's up until that point, at least the media had been saying that he had been England's player of the tournament.
Yeah.
He doesn't step up in the top 5 to take a penalty. And he lets a teenager step in front of him. It just doesn't make sense to me, man.
It's mad. And I think the problem comes in now is that, you know, as a national team coach, you don't have much time to...
Exactly.
You only get a couple of camps a season. So I don't know how he's going to improve or whether he's going to be there. I'm sure they'll keep with him. But yeah, I am a bit concerned for England going forward, excited about what can happen. But like you say, Curti, something has to change, I reckon, in terms of the... On how they're going to progress.
Yeah.
But let's move quickly onto transfer news. What's happening out there, Curti boy?
There's rumours that Federico Chiesa, who was so good for Italy throughout the Euro 2020, has been...
I loved him.
He's been linked with Chelsea. Apparently, they actually launched a 100 million euro pound bid for him. But Juventus have said...
100 million euro pound. So is that
I'm saying euro or pound. I can't remember.
Okay.
it's a new currency. It's a Bitcoin. They've launched this bid for his signature. It's not worked out though. Juventus have said absolutely not. He's untouchable. He's still on a 2-year loan deal with an obligation to buy. So Juventus still have to pay Fiorentina 40 million euros next year. I think they paid 10 million up front last year. But Juventus have said absolutely no. No, absolutely not. And then Haaland is also linked with Chelsea. I think Timo Werner's struggles have been well documented since coming to the Premier League. So, I think every club in the world right now would love to buy Haaland. I have read that Mina Raiola, his agent, would require or has asked for a £34 million or euro cut, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm sure that's going to put off any suitors. And then the biggest transfer story for me, at least, is that Griezmann is heading back to Atletico Madrid on a swap deal with Saul Niguez, the Spanish international who wasn't picked for Luis Enrique's Spain team now that went to the Euros. But yeah, Griezmann's set to go back. They're trying to get, or Barcelona's trying to get Griezmann off the wage bill. He earns 800,000 euros a week.
What?
Crazy, absolutely crazy. So he is going to go back to Atletico Madrid. Very strange story to me because Griezmann burnt or upset so many people at Atletico Madrid by joining Barcelona. I was in Spain in 2019. I was at the Wanda Metropolitana, and his gold plaque is on the floor at Atletico, and everybody's like Thibaut Courtois. Every player who's had over 100 caps, they have a plaque outside the stadium, and Griezmann's on every match day is covered with cigarette butts and spit. So he's not really the most popular person at Atletico Madrid right now, but I'm sure that they'd, you know, welcome him back. But yeah, interesting move. It's purely to get him off the wage bill because of their financial situation.
Sure. Okay. Well, Curdy, our time with you has come to an end.
Cool, Sean. I'm happy about it, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you so much, bud. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Cheers, guys.
That was good. Thanks, man. Cheers, bud.
Cheers, guys.
Teco,
let's talk about your
mate. My brother.
Let's talk about your mate. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's hung up his boots.
Really?
Yeah, he's done and dusted. 39 years old. Has officially retired from football at the age of 39. We all know Yeye as he joined Amakhosi in 2008 as a 26-year-old and became a pivotal part of the club's midfield. He amassed nearly 200 appearances in the famous yellow and black jersey before departing to SuperSport United in 2016, where he added two more pieces of silverware to his personal cabinet. He also claimed 50 caps for the senior national team and then did a pit part with Highlands Park and TS Galaxy. I don't know him very well. You obviously know him well. Top pro, good player, huh? Great player.
Yeah, man. What a great seven of the game.
Mm.
Look, we came into the PSL, I think, right about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to SuperSport, he went to Cosmos. And I remember having a conversation with Jomo Sono saying he wants to have me and Ye in the same team at Cosmos.
Yeah.
I remember that. And we came in at the right time. And when he moved to Chiefs, I moved to Orlando Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
And we from Midlands, both of us from the same hood. And the first time I saw Ye play, I think both of us were 15 at the time. And he was super, super talented football.
Yeah.
And he's always been like that, and he does simple things very, very well, and yeah, man, like he's a guy that that served the game very well. One of the guys that I got along with very, very well in camp,
yeah,
and even off camp, you know,
yeah.
He's a gentleman. He loves the game, and it's really, really nice to hear him say out loud that he wants to be a coach. And I think his younger brother as well, he's a coach for Kaizer Chiefs development or something like that. So he's a guy that really loves football. And
great.
For me, the move doesn't surprise me at all. I just want to say thanks to Yeye for all the great seasons and for always pushing some of us, you know, that plays in a similar position to do better and to try and be the best that we can. And for guys that are from, you know, same hood that met at 15 years, of age to be part of the first starting 11 for the World Cup in 2010. I mean, that says a lot.
I think a big thank you from all of us as football neutrals, and I obviously played against him a few times, but didn't get to know him. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, amazing. We're a bit strapped for time. Let's move on quickly to Kasafa Cup and Bafana's how they're doing. Obviously reaching the semi-finals. A quick shout out to Victor Letswalo, who scored a hat-trick, I think it was against Lesotho, which was amazing. And now they are up against, if I'm not mistaken, let me get this up here. Yeah, so South Africa against Mozambique. That is the 16th. I think that's tomorrow, the day after. And then Senegal against Eswatini. I think Senegal are looking very, very good. What do you think is going to happen, Teco, quickly? I think a South Africa-Senegal final. What do you think?
Yeah, South Africa-Senegal final. And South Africa, the talent that we have, we need to be winning this.
Yeah, I agree. Senegal looking good, eh?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, like, we have the talent as well.
Yeah.
Senegal and all these other top African countries will forever cause a threat, but I think we are the biggest threat.
I agree. And obviously on home turf, good luck, boys. We will obviously chat about this in depth next week on the podcast. Let's move on to this week in football history.
Today, we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
On 17th of July 1991, the 22 clubs in England's first division executed the founder members agreement, in which they each agreed to set up a new league that would be separate and apart from the existing football league. The new league, called the Premier League, replaced the first division as the top tier of English football. Wow, that's 30 years ago. Can you believe that? On 19th of July 2009, United States forward Abby Wambach scored her 100th international goal in a friendly win over Canada, and she did it in record time. On 22nd of July 2002, Leeds United centre-back Rio Ferdinand joined Manchester United for a British record fee of £30 million. It was the second record-setting transfer fee for Ferdinand, who had already become the world's most expensive defender. Beautiful. Who would have thunk? And from there, we move on to the car of the week. And this week, we have Sibu Siso Mabaliso, his new VW Golf 7 GTI. And as we know, he has just signed for Kaizer Chiefs. Good player. It'll be interesting to watch him going forward. The quintessential hot hatch, really the most exciting, most engaging, or best handling car in its class, but usually the most sophisticated and desirable. The Golf GTI has been around in some form or another since the mid-70s and has a mass of more than 2 million GTIs have been made to date, which is insane. Even though it's effectively an outgoing model, there's still a lot to like about the Golf 7 GTI. Yes, rivals are broadly cheaper, more powerful, or more fun to drive, but that's business as usual. None can match the GTI for desirability and quality. It's a hugely classy, classless object that is hard to beat as a day-to-day car. The GTI is fun to drive, make no mistake, arguably more so than the heavier all-wheel drive Golf R, but it's hardly the most engaging car in its class. It grips and goes and feels light on its feet, but the Ford, Hyundai, Megane are livelier and more engaging at the road speeds. What they lack, though, is the Golf's quality and day-to-day comfort, its feeling of sophistication and classiness. They simply aren't as desirable. I love GTRs. I always used to have one. I'd give it a 9 out of 10. It does come in a bit pricey, though, between 400 and 700,000, depending on what model you get. But yeah, it's a beauty. It's a beauty. It's a football car, bro.
Yeah.
It's a football car.
It's like Surprise Ralani. Very nippy.
It's nippy. And obviously, if we want a car like that, we need some motivation, my boy. And this week's motivational quote comes from none other than Justin Shonga. If you want to fly, you have to give up what weighs you down. We keep moving forward.
I don't want to fly,
bro. But I like what he says. You got to get rid of that baggage, man. You got to get rid of that baggage. And that's how we wrap up, guys. Episode 81 of The Car Wash. Whether you've been listening on SL Podcast at co.za, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or MahiKem 96.7 FM's Game Time, thank you for tuning in. I've been your host, Sean Roberts, and this has been the fantastic Mr. Teko Madise.
We may go there.
We will see you same time, same place next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL Podcast. This is a Slangana car.